We get to D in the presentation by Administrative Presiding Justice Hill and Justice Jeffrey Johnson. Welcome. We have public comment that I had alluded to earlier on this item, and I'd first like to call for public comment then our colleague, Judge David Lampe.
Good afternoon. I'm Judge David Lampe, director of the speaking to you today as a director on behalf of the Alliance of California Judges. Thank you, Chief Justice, Justice Baxter, Justice Miller, Justice Hill, all of the members of the Judicial Council for this opportunity to address Agenda Item D. In July 2011, the Chief Justice appointed a new committee, the Court Facilities Working Group, to oversee the Judicial Branch Capital Improvement Program and further appointed Justice Hill as chair. I have already privately offered my condolences to Justice Hill for that appointment. Justice Johnson leads the committee's cost reduction program, and we support the committee's recommendation to reassess construction projects, as they will report to you this afternoon. We also urge that all projects must be, if not fully, at least generally reassessed in light of the current budget crisis. The Alliance also suggests that the Council adopt an immediate temporary suspension of construction contracting and projects until the budget picture becomes more clear. State revenue right now is lower than projected. We all need to see the May revise, looking on that with some trepidation. Our group's discussions in Sacramento make it apparent that the legislature may authorize that some portion of the construction funds may be authorized to mitigate the devastation that we are seeing in our operating budgets. And we do fully recognize the need for secure, well-maintained facilities, and we do not minimize the state of disrepair and inadequacy in many state courthouses. What we are urging, though, is that at this time, we must preserve maximum flexibility, and we should not encumber or commit funds now without knowing the total budget picture. Finally, we also propose that an investigation and reassessment of all projects be undertaken by outside experts. We realize that this would be an added cost. However, we believe that Justice Hill's committee would benefit from an independent review and report. The reported high costs of construction have met with skepticism from judges, legislators, and the public. We all have acknowledged that there were mistakes made with the CCMS project, including the lack of an early cost-benefit analysis, and those mistakes caused an excoriating report by the state auditor. No one wants to look back someday facing similar criticisms of our management of court construction. Independent review now during the pause of reassessment would help reassure all concerned that we are doing everything possible to maximize scarce public resources. I want to thank you for your thoughtful consideration.
Thank you, Judge Lampe. Next, we'll hear from Mr. Robert Bergman, City Council Member and Judge Pro Tem.
Good afternoon, Chief Justice, members of the council. I've come here really with a narrow purpose, and I just wanted to come down to your meeting to emphasize how critical it is to our small town to keep a new courthouse location on its current site. And I recognize that our project is one of the 13 that's subject to reassessment. And in that process, I think it's very important to know that our community has come together with just a singular focus on this site, because moving elsewhere with any fashion of a project will really devastate downtown. But directly on point is we formed, when this project started 3 years ago roughly, we formed a committee, and on the committee are contractors and sophisticated and experienced architects, our city engineer and staff. We've all worked together to evaluate what a theoretical project could be, and the numbers that we've come up with is we believe that a smartly sized project that meets all the requirements can in fact be built where it needs to be built for between $35 and $38 million less than the original budget, which is some 35% to 40% reduction. And in light of that, if in fact in the reassessment process the project is going to go forward, those numbers seem to work very well. And, you know, I'm not just here speaking for the city council, but I also carry with it the full and support of our board of supervisors, also our court. Our presiding judge, Tom Anderson, and I speak quite often about this. I'm bringing his message down there along with the community, Chamber of Commerce, Economic Resources Council, all the usual suspects to say that we are together, because there's been some confusion in the background, I think, at the administrative office of the courts level, believing there's significant dissent in our community, and that sort of made things an issue. I'm here to tell you that it's that important to us to be here, and thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Bergman. Next, we'll hear from Mr. Merrill Schechtsnyder, President and CEO.
Good afternoon, Chief Justice, Associate Justices, and Administrators. Thank you for the opportunity to take a few minutes to present our proposal. I represent a consortium of labor, construction, financial, and developers here in California that would love to assist the AOC in its venture to complete its facilities. We have spent quite a bit of time looking at various models that might work for the AOC. And we've come to the conclusion that where you deem necessary, we would love to fulfill your need to do lease options. We have determined that lease options would benefit the AOC by limiting the outlay of capital. You would not have to put up capital to make lease options work. There are some facilities that you've all determined you would like to do lease options on. We give you a great deal of flexibility in that you will be able to determine when and how and where you want to do these facilities, which accelerates your project completion, quicker site resolution, no need for asset substitutions, which is part of the bond process when you do leasehold bonding. This can become problematic, especially in light of the state budget's restrictions and requirements. And lastly, risk management. We will be able to share the risk with the AOC and with the state of California in putting projects together that will benefit you in a timely manner and when you need it. We have submitted proposals to Justice Hill, and look forward to at some point in time when you have made a determination to do lease options that we be given an opportunity to present our ideas. We believe that our financial model approaches the same cost as you would have to incur should you do these by bond financing. And it would provide a bridge between construction and takeout, which is an impediment to you getting your your projects done now. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Schechtsnyder. Next, we'll hear from Mr. Michael Keeley.
Good afternoon, Chief Justice. And just to follow up on what, and members of the council, thank you so much for allowing me to be here today. And just to follow up on what Mr. Schechtsnyder was saying earlier, I imagine having a home built with no money down, lease payments, in which you could exercise the right to purchase that home at any time within the next 30 years. No money up, built to your specs, and you can purchase it, prevailing rates, at any time within 30 years. I wouldn't have to think too hard about that. I mean, it's something to me that would be a natural. I took pleasure in reading the report authored by Justice Hill's subcommittee, Justice Lucas, and I want to thank Justice Jefferson as well for the input and the direction. We have had the opportunity to meet with stakeholders in Sacramento. That's where we're located. And every one of them to a T has endorsed the idea of going forward, but the cost and the resource allocation is there's a gap, there's a void, as you probably know. Fortunately, right now, money is at an all-time low. If you're going to build, if you're going to borrow money, now is the time to do it if you're able to do it. But the financial rating and the capability of the state right now is so questionable that they may not be able to get the type of rates that can generate this magnitude of development, and particularly with relevance to the private sector and being able to serve as liaisons for that relationship. So I would urge you to strongly consider working with the private sector. We may not have all the answers, but perhaps we can give a perspective in terms of financing, in terms of creating options that were not considered or perhaps should be given further consideration. I thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Keeling. At this time, then, we'll hear the presentation. Thank you, Administrator Presiding Justice Hill.
Good afternoon, Chief, members of the Council. I very much appreciate the opportunity this afternoon to be with you again to report on our efforts with respect to the 1407 Court Construction Program. This has been, as you undoubtedly are aware, a daunting task. Many tough decisions have been made, and many tough decisions will have to be made over the coming months. We are not unaware of the angst that our decisions have caused and will continue to cause many of our fellow courts and their communities. We simply hope that they will understand that in this economic climate, many tough and often untenable choices have to be made, and they have to be made now. As you've seen from the public comments, both written and oral, there are concerned and passionate views on either side. I wanted to thank Judge Lampe for taking the time to be with us and to offer his comments about the program and where we're going. On the one hand, for those who are urging that we shut down our court construction program, either temporarily or permanently, we and they will need to be ready to explain to the public why we have taken this approach. If indeed there's a security breach caused by inadequate facilities resulting in injuries or death to the public or court staff, we need to have an explanation. Or if there's an earthquake that pancakes one of our seismically insufficient buildings, we have to have a good explanation for why we made these decisions today or in the future. And we also have to explain to disabled individuals who have excruciating difficulty in courthouse after courthouse across our state getting in and having their cases heard and having their case heard in a manner that is dignified to them and to the other parties. We have to be prepared to answer those questions, and there are no easy answers to any of them. Unfortunately, California has a sorry history of at times ignoring critical infrastructure needs in order to cover short-term operating goals. Now, that is something that we have to think about as we look forward. Now, that's one side of the coin. The other side of the coin is that obviously it's a new day, a new economic climate. We understand fully that there has to be a balance. Business as usual is no longer the order of the day now, and it can't be at any point in the future. In this economic crisis, with no end in sight, it simply can't be. While we proceed with the most critically needed courthouses that we intend to move forward with, we need to take a very close look at every project to determine that when we're able to build them, they're built efficiently and very economically. And if they can't be built economically, they shouldn't be built. They should be canceled, pure and simple. As you know, since 2009, more than $1.1 billion in funding collected from judicial branch fees, not the general fund, judicial branch fees, and designated by the legislature for court facilities has been borrowed, swept to the general fund, or redirected to court operations. That's $1.1 billion to date. The construction program has been doing its share, and undoubtedly will continue to do its share to help our courts with their immediate needs. But I'm sure that in the scheme of things, we need to make very clear that it needs to be a balanced approach and an equitable approach, and that not all eyes immediately turn to the construction program whenever there's a shortfall in some other area. When we created the Courthouse Cost Reduction Subcommittee of our working group, I told most of you last December that the name said it all. It wasn't the Courthouse Review or the Cost Review. It was the Courthouse Cost Reduction Subcommittee. Its mandate was to take a close look at every SB 1407 courthouse project in the state and to significantly reduce their costs where possible, with the understanding that some of these projects are too far along to make dramatic measures of, shall we say, cost cutting. But for those that were at the beginning stages, site acquisition, preliminary plans, where we really have an opportunity to cut the costs, we needed to do it and do it now. And under the very able leadership of Justice Jeff Johnson, who is chairing that subcommittee, they are doing just that. And in a few minutes, I'll ask him to review some of those goals, some of the proposals that we have for you today. And again, with your understanding that it's an ongoing process, we understand that we have many courts across the state who have been working for years on their courthouse projects. And this is turning things, to a certain extent for them, upside down. We ask for their indulgence, but it's something that obviously we feel needs to be done, and it needs to be done not only as a short-term bridge, but it needs to be a change in policy and direction, and we will be proposing that at this time with Justice Johnson. Jeff?
Chief, members of the Judicial Council, thank you for this opportunity to address you. My subcommittee, the Courthouse Cost Reduction Subcommittee of the Court Facilities Working Group, has met twice since early February to review how we can substantially reduce the cost of the SB 1407 program. Our subcommittee is composed of judges and court administrators, as well as experts in the fields of design and construction. We have learned a great deal in this process. In these times of ongoing budget cuts, our goal is to maximize savings so that we can stand before you and the people of California and say that the SB 1407 program is being delivered cost effectively. We have, A, looked at how projects were originally estimated. B, considered lower cost construction methodologies such as tilt-up construction. C, discussed dozens of other ways to reduce building sizes and costs. And D, reviewed every single SB 1407 project. In reviewing the SB 1407 projects, we looked at whether or not every planned courtroom is needed, because the number of courtrooms is the key driver of building size. We have also looked at whether or not leasing space or renovating the existing building should be examined to meet the very real needs of the court for a safe, secure, and functional courthouse. The report before you is the result of our analysis. We recommend to you a two-pronged approach, bolstered by cost reduction principles and a process for making technical adjustments to the design standards. First, we recommend it taking a very hard look at 13 projects, totaling $1.1 billion in project costs, that we recommend be reassessed. We want to examine fundamental aspects of these 13 projects. For some of these projects, we need to confirm the number of courtrooms, as I said, the key driver, the building size. For some projects, we need to thoroughly study renovation of the existing building. For others, we need to explore if there is a more cost-effective leasing alternative. We have not set a requirement for how long the reassessment should take. Each of these 13 projects is unique, and some projects will require more time to reassess than others. Now, I suspect you're wondering if reassessment ultimately will mean recommendation of project cancellations to this council. So I'll address this now. First, it takes time to act responsibly. It takes time to make sound fiscal decisions. In the next months, our work will involve prioritizing projects based on the needs of the communities, availability and viability of cost reduction options, and cooperation with local courts and communities. Projects that do not identify substantial cost reductions will be reviewed for possible cancellation, which is ultimately a decision of this judicial council. We are taking our charge to reduce project costs very seriously. And we all know the greatest savings come from canceling projects altogether. Now, the second part of our two-pronged recommendation is to allow 24 projects to move forward under the reduced cost now category, as long as they meet or exceed minimum cost reduction percentages. The minimum reductions we recommend are from 2 to 10% or more, depending on project type and where the project is in the development process. These reductions are to hard construction costs of the project, the bricks and the mortar. I want to emphasize that the minimum cost reduction percentages are in addition to the 4% mandated by the Council in December of last year. Therefore, the recommended 2% reduction to renovation projects transforms the 4% previously mandated reduction into a 6% reduction compared to how the hard construction costs of these projects were originally budgeted. Likewise, the 10% reductions to projects in the site acquisition phase means we're talking about a 14% or more reduction compared to the respective original hard construction costs. We're confident the minimum cost reductions and more can be achieved without compromising safety, security, building performance, or court operations. We will have functional, safe, and cost-effective buildings on the front end when they are built, and on the back end when they are operated. One special category of projects is recommended. These are called the cost reduction demonstration projects. And these projects are in the early stage of design or soon to be in design, and we recommend that they can achieve cost reductions much higher than a total of 14%. That's the 4 plus 10% that we talked about. These projects must identify all possible ways to reduce costs in order to proceed. These projects will set the benchmark for the smaller projects still in acquisition. One other important recommendation I want to highlight is that we recommend that Courthouse Cost Reduction Subcommittee be given the responsibility to oversee and have direct implementation authority for ensuring that the costs of SB 1407 projects are reduced substantially. I welcome this challenge and assure that I will take this responsibility very seriously. This concludes my presentation. I'll turn it back to Justice Hill.
Thank you very much, Justice Johnson. At this time, we have just a brief video highlight of some of the courts around the state that have serious challenges that they are facing with respect to their facility needs. We'll turn it over to that, and then I'll have some concluding comments.
As many as 1,000 people descend on the Porterville Courthouse in Tulare County every day, 20 parking places. And the hallways are jammed with jurors, witnesses, in custodies, judges.
It's a horrendous security concern.
200 people try to squeeze into a courtroom built for 60. Clerks are elbow to elbow. The air conditioning doesn't work, and storage is non-existent. In Woodland, the courthouse was built in 1917 for Yolo County's population of 25,000. Now there are 200,000, making 400,000 court visits a year, with no air conditioning for the valley heat. Services are scattered in 7 locations, including the holding area for inmates across the street, a daily parade headed for the public hallways, literally stopping traffic.
Not a pretty picture.
The Long Beach Courthouse has peeling paint everywhere, water damage, mildew, chunks of the ceiling falling down. And they have a disgusting problem with rats in the courtrooms, the four-legged kind. One morning, they caught 7 in traps.
The stench is really bad, and I'm the first one in the morning, so I smell.
In Susanville, Lassen County, the old 1917 courthouse is seriously impractical for modern use. No jury assembly rooms, small courtrooms, inmates mixing with everyone else. Wheelchair users have to conduct their business in the lobby.
I'm sure they feel a bit humiliated to be there in the public.
The Banning Courthouse in Riverside County was built in the 50s.
The heating's a problem. Air conditioning is a problem. The smells are a problem.
I know that there's asbestos in this building.
Staff are squished in like sardines. It's especially tight in customer service areas. In 1958, they built this addition to the historic San Bernardino courthouse. More than 112,000 people each month crowd in, with incredibly long lines snaking through corridors. They no longer make parts for these ancient holding cells. When inmates are due in court, deputies have to clear the hallways.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.
The 1894 courthouse in Willows, Glenn County, is still in daily use with serious seismic issues. Three additions were tacked on in the 1940s. Here, too, everyone mixes in together.
It's a security nightmare here.
Every space does double, triple duty. This is an interview room, a storage room, and a place for kids. Staff workspace, impossibly tight and inefficient. At the Broussard Justice Center in Oakland, one weekend a few years ago, a very large old water heater on the roof burst. So much damage, the Alameda Court abandoned the building. Downtown San Diego is a sprawling complex of horrors. There is literally an active earthquake fault directly beneath the North Tower. Security grossly inadequate, too many doors to secure, and street traffic passing beneath the complex in two places. There's asbestos everywhere. The buildings are out of code for ADA, fire protection, and suppression, and there's a serious shortage of public restrooms. The San Joaquin Courthouse in Stockton, built in the 60s, is one of the worst in the state. Way too small and literally falling apart, chronically neglected by the county for decades. These and other California courthouses will all benefit by the judicial branch's continued commitment to responsible stewardship.
Just some highlights of some of the problems that we face around the state. And finally, I would just point out that as Judge Lampe indicated, it would be helpful to have an independent consultant look at the program. We are doing that now. At the end of last year, directed by our vice chair, Patricia Lucas, we are engaged in a top-to-bottom review of OCCM, and we will have a report to you by the end of the year as to their findings and any recommendations that we have. So I just wanted to say that good idea, and we're doing just that. I stand open for any questions.
Thank you, Justice Hill. Thank you, Justice Johnson. Any questions or comments regarding the recommendations? Yes. Judge Wesley.
Thank you. Justice Hill, I talked to you about this earlier today, but and I really don't want to get into the whole thing right now. But one of the items on our agenda today raises issues with me about our construction program, and that is, can we maintain all these new courthouses that we're constructing? Do we have money to maintain them once we build them, especially if they're larger than the ones we have now? Do we have a budget for janitorial services that is commensurate with the building program? Or do we have a budget for security that is commensurate with the building program? Do we have a budget for furniture that is commensurate with the building program? Or are we going to build courthouses that we can't staff with security, put furniture in, or maintain in the future?
You know, maintenance is extremely important. And, in fact, at the last meeting, your colleague, Judge Heiberger, passionately told all of you what it means to have courthouses that aren't well maintained. You can have courthouses that you defer maintenance on, and what is at one point a leak becomes a multimillion dollar flood. And so it is extremely important, and I agree, Judge Wesley, that we need to make sure that we have maintenance budgets that can not only take care of our existing facilities, but new facilities. And one of the ways that we can do that, hopefully, is if we can save, and we're going to, I believe, save considerable sums of money over the coming years in the building program. I know Judge Heiberger indicated that he would love to see that, and I think at the meeting in December you indicated that you'd like to see some of that money in maintenance, and we will make every attempt to do so and to make those recommendations to you.
Judge Rosenberg.
First of all, I'd like to just say thank you for all the work that you've done and will do. I think the video and the comments, frankly, from the liaison reports make clear that there are a number of courthouses and courtrooms throughout the state that are substandard and need to be upgraded by having them be standard. I have two questions. Number one, the cuts that you're looking at are cuts in the hard costs, but there's a substantial amount of cutting, presumably, that could be done in the soft costs. Have you or are you going to look at that?
We are and we will.
Okay. That's succinct. And number two, and I talked to Justice Hill about this earlier, all the courts that have projects in the works, I believe they understand that there have to be some cuts and reductions, but we can't have cuts and then 6 months later or a year later have more cuts and then 6 months later have more cuts, because when you cut, it often requires retooling, redesign. That costs money. That clearly results in delays. Let's make the cuts. Let's not make 1,000 cuts. You know, we don't want to have the death by 1,000 cuts here.
Well, we couldn't agree more. And part of the, as I've indicated before, the difficulty that we've had a little bit is parachuting into the middle of the process. We're trying to look at things in real time. Some are at the beginning stages, some are at the middle, some are further along. And if, in fact, there's a project that's further along, and unfortunately it's just, in our opinion, too costly, some of the retrofit or the redesign costs, when in the aggregate you could save 10 times that by maybe building a smarter building, are decisions that we have to make. But your point is a good one, and that is courts need some stability. They need to know, is this what we're dealing with, or at what point is all of this going to stop?
I do have one fear, Chief Justice, that I want to spell out. I think as stewards of money, the people's money ultimately, we have to be very frugal in how we're approaching this. But my concern is that we save all this money by cutting these courthouses and courtrooms, and then it gets swept by the legislature and the governor, used for some other purpose. That would be very discouraging and defeating.
Certainly, yes. Judge Friedman and then Commissioner Alexander.
Just to follow up on that point, the video was so powerful. I think any opportunity we have to present it to the legislature would be effective and in hopefully preventing them from another harmful sweep.
I had a question. I noticed that some of the methods of trying to reduce costs, and Justice Johnson addressed it, was like limiting the number of courtrooms, because I noticed some of them have were requesting more courtrooms than they currently have judges assigned, and like cutting sizes of self-help centers where they already have lines out the door because they don't have enough room now. In the design of these buildings, is there going to be a way that those could be easily renovated to add those things in at a later time? In the design, when you're already deciding to cut services that we know we're going to need in the future?
The saying, it makes too much sense for government work, sometimes applies to the way standards are dealt with in terms of what we have to comply with. For instance, the Department of Finance oftentimes will not allow us to build one more courtroom than we currently have a need for, even though we might in 2 years or 6 months need that courtroom. We can't build it. We are going to be revisiting that with the Department of Finance, because it makes just good sense, if in fact we know that we need that courtroom, to be able to at least shell it out at this point and then finish it later. So we're approaching them again. Their position in the past has been that they wouldn't approve build-outs like that, but we're going to make that attempt and see if we can do it to save some long-term money. It doesn't make any sense to build an annex when you can just finish out a courtroom.
And I would add that we're going to have a special focus on that in those counties where we know there will be an increase in the number of judges in the near time. And that's something that we've looked at as a group and talked with the AOC staff about.
And then the other thing I noticed was some of the recommendations had to do with, like, saving costs that would be, like, transporting inmates, you know, video arraignments and closer to jails and those kind of things. One of the things that I've heard is that those costs are saving money for the sheriffs. I'm not sure they're saving as much money for the courts, and the money is now going to the sheriffs. And is there a process of negotiating getting those funds back out of the sheriff's budget so that we can use them for other purposes?
I won't be heading that one up. but it's certainly an area where costs could be saved.
So. Judge Rubin.
Thank you. Justice Hill, just I'm curious. So that we have a total of 37 projects on page 2, kind of listed out in your summary. Is there, can you explain the criteria, or can you point me where I can sort of maybe read the criteria for how a project became one of the 13 projects that was treated one way and the 24 projects that were treated a different way?
It was a series of conference calls and extended debate by the committee, and it was we had initially informed all of the courts that they should submit any and all material to us supporting their projects. We had reams of material over the years supporting, you know, the building of their courthouse. But we told every court that we would appreciate it if they would get us information, update us with respect to anything they wished us to consider, and then we, in essence, had a very lengthy and vibrant debate as to each and every project. We started at the top and went through each one, reviewed which cost savings proposals we thought fit which project, and which projects were more amenable to a total reassessment. For instance, the Nevada project that you've heard about. It's a $102 million project, 6 courtrooms. There has been some, you know, heated debate within Nevada City about the Art Deco courthouse, and you've heard all of that. But what we were looking at is, was there really a review of the renovation option? Could we, instead of $102 million, renovate the court for $20 million or $30 million and have a beautiful court that would serve the needs of the citizens and the judges and the public, but not cost as much as it costs? Or is there a lease option? Or is there another site in Nevada City that would work? All of those led us to believe that that's a perfect reassessment case. And so the committee agreed, made that recommendation to the full working group. A full working group agreed, and it's now to you for consideration. That was just one example of how we did it.
Justice Baxter.
Yeah, I'd like to commend Justice Hill and Justice Johnson for the work and the committee for a very balanced approach. I think there's clearly no question that there has to be a reassessment in view of the budget situation that we have. But we really can't lose sight of the fact that 1407 would never have passed had it not been tied to court construction. And at the time it was passed, we were indebted to the lawyers, the plaintiff's lawyers, the defense lawyers. We were indebted to the trade unions for the support that they provided in the legislature. There were votes by legislators who were, the motivation was court construction. That's why 1407 was passed. Now, I'm sure they would all agree that in view of the current budget situation, we have to reconsider. But I think the balanced approach that you're urging does make sense without breaching faith with the various groups that we dealt with at the time 1407 was passed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Fritz.
Justice Hill, I'm very impressed with the work of the committee. One of the things that I'm concerned about, and you touched on it briefly, is the number of courtrooms that exist versus the number that may be needed in the future. And I look at one example of a reassessment in Los Angeles County out in Santa Clarita, which I believe is probably the fastest growing, and the growth potential has the greatest potential for future growth of anywhere in the county for new home construction. I'm very familiar with that courthouse. I was there in 1975 or whatever. It's three judges, and it's way undersized now. At the same time, we've looked to, I think, the method has often been to replace or repair existing courts on existing sites or near existing sites. And I really think we have to look at regional approaches to where we can site a new facility, perhaps in a different site, but where it will serve an area that makes geographical sense to the county. Los Angeles is a county that's really in need of that. It had 24 municipal courts. Most of those facilities are still in use in varying terms, various terms today. Glendale, Burbank is 7 miles, 6.2 miles from Glendale, and Glendale is 7 miles from Pasadena courts, three courts. And so I'm pleased you're reassessing Glendale. Building, just replacing that makes no sense to me. So, and if there are opportunities where we could even think about the necessary legislative action or to build a courthouse that would be close to a county line that could perhaps seat and serve judges and citizens from both counties in urban areas, I think we need to think about, does that make sense? Not just because it's in San Bernardino County, it has to be in San Bernardino, while Pomona is just a few miles away to the west. So.
Thank you. We will definitely be looking at things.
Judge Kaufman.
You know, we built a regional courthouse in Tintoon County. We're the only one doing it. It's a great experiment, and I encourage people to take a look at it. Number one. Number two is the real issue in my mind, Justice Hill and Justice Johnson, is that we had 1732 projects. We had like 17 of them, I think. And now we have originally on the 1407 projects, there's supposed to be 41. So if everything went well and we did everything we originally planned to do, we'd build 60 courthouses over the next 5-10 years. But there are 500 court structures in the state of California, and we're going to have to replace them at some point. And it's going to take over a long period of time. We need to have a plan how we're going to do that. And getting money passed for another 1407 type of bill is probably impossible in this time. But there are other courthouses out there that really do need help and need to be refurbished or replaced over the next 10, 15 years. It's not going to get better. It's going to get worse.
Any further comment? Or question? It seems to me that the recommendations that are put before us are put, it's items one through three, and three has several subparts. Items four are recommendations four and five, and then six, seven, and eight are broken down in your materials as separate recommendations. And so just for clarification and to give counsel the maximum opportunity to ask questions or comments as to each recommendation, I will entertain motions to pass or to vet these eight recommendations in the pattern recommended to you in the materials. So I'll entertain a motion as to recommendations 1, 2, and 3, and 3's subparts.
So moved.
Thank you, Judge O'Malley.
Second.
Second by David Yamasaki and Justice Baxter. Any further discussion on recommendations 1, 2, and 3, and 3's subparts? Hearing none, all in favor of those recommendations say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Recommendations 1 through 3 and some parts carry. Taking up recommendations 4 and 5. We'll hear a motion.
So moved.
Justice Baxter moves. Second. Second Judge O'Malley. Any further questions, discussion, or comment on recommendations 4 and 5? Hearing and seeing none. All in favor of recommendations 4 and 5?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Taking recommendation number 6. Okay. To hear a motion?
So moved.
Thank you, Judge O'Malley.
Second.
Second, Judge Moss. Any further discussion on recommendation 6? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Matter carries. Recommendation number 7.
I have a question.
Yes.
Justice Hill, number 7, I just didn't understand 7, is that the courts will come to this committee and basically they will have the authority to approve or not. I didn't know where the authority, did the authority rest in this committee, subcommittee, your committee, or the Judicial Council for number 7? I just didn't understand.
For NH, with respect to the design standards?
It's the authority delegation of cost reduction oversight.
Recommendation 7.
Number page 9 of our report.
That goes to the day-to-day oversight.
That's Justice Johnson.
The day-to-day oversight of the cost reduction effort. And once we've gotten our mandate from this council, that subcommittee would make sure that each project is adhering to those mandates. In the event there's something like a cancellation, it would obviously have to come back to this committee. We're not talking about doing anything other than just day-to-day oversight and obviously reporting to this committee with regard to our progress.
We thought it important to have judges involved in the process because big decisions are being made with respect to design standards and cost reductions and whether cost reductions have been met. And we felt that the Courthouse Cost Reduction Committee, subcommittee, would be the best conduit for that while working with all of the affected courts.
I make a motion to approve.
I'll second it.
Justice Miller moves to approve. Judge Jackson seconds. And this is recommendation number 7. Any further discussion?
I just had a question on that as well. Because it refers to all of the above recommendations, and I understand that, you know, it's intended to sort of not immerse the council in the minutiae of these sorts of things, but obviously the reassessments could well result in differences of opinion as between the committee and the courts themselves, how dramatic a reassessment, how dramatic a change going forward in terms of modification of the project. So I'm just wondering whether there's some way to add some clarity that clearly I understood from Justice Johnson that if a project is to be scrapped, it would come before the council. But short of a project being scrapped, if there's to be a major reduction that court disagrees with, if there's a difference of opinion, I would presume that also would come to the council, and is there any way to just add some clarity to that?
We will definitely be back to you on those. And we were looking at more almost ministerial kinds of decisions in terms of cost-cutting goals, but if, in fact, we're saying instead of building out a courthouse that you had expected to get, we're now going down a renovation path, that is something that if, number one, we're going to come back to you anyway, whether the court says we're fine with it or not, it's something that you will be passing on at an upcoming meeting, if that's one of the approaches.
Thank you. Judge Kaufman?
Just to clarify that, I'm just a little confused. I'm not sure I disagree with you.
Happy for the question.
If a court says we need 10 courtrooms and your committee says we need 9, who's the final arbiter of that?
I think that we would probably, obviously if there's a disagreement and if the court wishes to come to the council, nothing would preclude them from coming. Certainly, I think that we'll be able to work out most of those situations because, again, it's numbers driven. The numbers are before the Department of Finance, and so it's not a situation where the numbers are different for what they have versus what we have. So, and the final arbiter on those decisions is the Department of Finance. So they would be telling us how many courtrooms we could build.
So if you want, Miriam, my motion can be to adopt recommendation number 7 with the understanding, as was indicated, that this is merely providing you the authority to oversee the cost-cutting measures. And if there arises some dispute or change in that, then it would go back to your committee with a recommendation to the council.
Absolutely, and that's our intention.
I'll second that.
Okay. So I have Justice Miller's amended motion seconded by Judge Jackson and Judge Kaufman. Any further discussion on Recommendation 7 as amended? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Recommendation number 8. Do I hear a motion?
So moved.
Judge O'Malley?
Second.
Second Judge Thoe. Any further comment or question regarding recommendation number 8? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Recommendation number 8 carries. Thank you, Justice Hill, Justice Johnson. I know how much work this is, and I only get the summary of the work that you and your committees are doing. And I speak for all of council when I say how grateful we are that you are overseeing this very important program and that you are seeking the expert oversight that will help this program move forward carefully but deliberately and with full disclosure and information to the Judicial Council. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Robert. Thank you.